Despite his regret, the armorer was as enthusiastic as any of them as they entered the rooms and looked at the pictures that hung there. Each of the friends had particular favorites, but there was a general agreement that certain artists struck a common chord for all of them.
Georgia O'Keeffe. The way she captures the light down in the southwest is wonderful. And that early picture of the lights of old New York, magical.
She resided down in Abiquiu in New Mexico. Lived to a great age, but went blind toward the end of her life. Amazing, amazing woman. Look at the one called Black Mesa. Marvelous.
I like those sea pictures. Winslow Homer, the way he showed light on the water. I've never ever seen real famous paintings like this. Thought they'd mostly been destroyed in the Skydark times.
Happened in Europe during the big Second War. Hid treasures in mines and places like that. Good to see that someone here in Tennessee had enough sense to save these pictures. Miraculous.
Jack paused a long time in front of a reproduction of a picture by Andrew Wyeth.
Huh. This got my wife's name. Called Christina's World.
It showed a young disabled woman lying on a sloping field, staring away from the painter toward a group of buildings farther up the hill.
Like a frozen moment. It's a bit like that other guy we all liked.
What was his name? Hoppy?
Hopper. Edward Hopper.
Mildred pulled at Ryan's sleeve to lead him back to a trio of Hopper pictures. One showed a sunlit house with the draperies drawn across the second floor windows. There was the feeling that someone was about to walk by or had just vanished from a window. The second painting was of an office in a city with a woman seated at a typewriter and another woman holding a mug of coffee, neither looking at the other. The third Hopper featured an elderly man sitting in a canvas chair in the garden of a mansion overlooking a deep blue ocean. Once again, there was that odd, timeless feeling of an event trapped forever in amber. Single pictures had attracted each of them individually. Jack loved some capering little men in bright colors, but the label was missing from it. JB was taken by a print of an electric chair by Andy Warhol, though the others found it ghoulish. Christy admired a geometric pattern by Frank Stella, and one of Mildred's favorites was of a stark industrial landscape painted with great attention to detail by Charles Sheeler. Doc was struck speechless by a magnificent Western painting by Frank Russell, depicting a man trapped on a ledge by a wounded cougar high in the Sierras. Ryan was dazzled by the paintings, though they had obviously been hung in great haste, with no attempt to worry about alignment or lighting. One or two of the artists were people that he'd vaguely heard of, but he hadn't been prepared for the richness of color and texture. Even painters he didn't much care for had undeniable talent. But his own personal favorite, which nobody else much cared for, was a gray picture of a misty sea with a bridge in the background by John Sloan. It seemed to capture a feeling of isolation and loneliness that spoke directly to Ryan.
Shame we can't somehow take the pictures with us. Still, just seeing them all like this has been truly fabulous.
I had never imagined that such a collection of treasures still existed anywhere in this blighted Deathlands.
Doc took a last look into the nearest room.
So rich. Still would have preferred it to have been artillery. But the art was a good surprise.
Well, I'm hungry. I am. Real hungry.
You and me both, Jack. We heading out of the redoubt now?
Why not?
With the art section far behind them, they moved toward the marked entrance. Eventually, they made it through an open set of double sec doors and into a massive vaulted hall, bigger than an aircraft hangar.
Defensive positions all around here, ready to repel the enemy.
Only problem with that tactical planning was that all the enemy were dead as well.
What happened to all of the tens of millions of corpses? I've always wondered that. Should be boneyard, shouldn't there?
I also pondered that, madam. Indeed, I once was fortunate enough to visit the ruins at Mesa Verde, and I asked the ranger on duty the same question. Where did all the Anasazi bodies go?
And,
Dr. Wyeth, he pointed out that nature is an excellent disposer of corpses. The weather combines with wild animals. It is close to 100 years since the skies over the land of the free grew dark with nuclear warheads. Time enough for most bodies out in the open to have been absorbed back into the environment. Fortunately for all of us, mankind is intensely biodegradable.
The main doors to each redoubt had up to then shared a common three-digit code to open and close. 3, 5, and 2 was punched in to open the vanadium steel door, then 2, 5, and 3 to close it again. This one was the same. The code was printed on a white card, sealed in plastic under the control panel.
Not all that secret, is it? Still, I suppose there were so many soldiers in white coats who needed to come in and out of all the redoubts, it was simpler to have the same entrance code for all of them.
We using it?
Hell yeah, we're using it. Go ahead, Jack.
The door opened up on a dreary vista of what seemed like dozens of small lakes dotted with forested islands. The air was fresh and clean, with a hint of rain. The sky was overcast and dull, showing complete cloud cover, darkening toward the west. There was no sign at all of human life. JB took out his miniature sextant.
Tennessee's right. Near as I can tell from this, we're close to the north of the state, but it looks like there's been some serious quake or fire damage up this way.
I don't remember being around here with Trader. We went to Memphis a few times, and we were going to that place with the country music.
Nashville. I was going to go there the time I wanted to visit Graceland. I was really taken with country sounds. Willie and Waylon and the boys. I wanted to go and see the Grand Old Opry, where they broadcast in the old days.
Look at the doll.
They all turned away from the watery landscape and stared at the entrance to the redoubt, gaping like a gigantic maw. The metal frame was scarred and pitted, though it was made, like the door, of high-tempered vanadium steel. The concrete around the entrance was also scorched with the marks of some old fire that had broken chunks of it away, opening the stones to the elements.
Skydark damage. Must have been close to some serious nuking.
JB ran his fingers over the pocked concrete and shook his head.
Amazing that the whole place didn't go up. Look at the state of it.
He stood back to try to take in the whole frontage of the redoubt.
Dark night, but it's well concealed. If you didn't know it was here, I reckon you could walk within 100 yards and not spot what it was.
The hillside above the hidden fortress was covered with trees, most of them looking about 50 or 60 years old. There was also the evidence of a fire that had obviously raged with catastrophic force through the region, leaving a number of blackened, brittle corpses of pines to stand among the fresh, greener conifers. JB studied one of the tiny maps that he kept with him.
The whole land's changed a lot. I think this was once close to what was called the land between the lakes, and it was real near to the Tennessee River. But it wasn't like this then, with all these dozens of lakes and islands and stuff.
Maybe quakes? Not much of Deathlands is still like it was before Skydark. It's possible.
Ryan felt an insect on his cheek.
Whatever it was, changed the land. There's not much sign of anyone living here. No smoke, no buildings. Just a lot of nothing.
Where do we go to get some food? I don't see much wildlife either.
We'll find something. Interesting that the redoubt hasn't been broken into, especially as the entrance has been damaged.
Still take a serious nuke to break it down. Like I said, probably can't see it unless you're on top of it. The trail that used to run from it vanished underwater just down yonder.
They all looked to where JB was pointing with the muzzle of his Uzi. Ryan could follow the rough line of a 2-lane blacktop road that sloped down from where they were standing, winding between a jagged bluff and a sheer drop, then disappearing under the limpid water of the nearest lake.
Looks to me like this is an island.
Doc clenched his fist and placed it over his heart, as he did when he was about to declaim.
No man is an island, dear friends, for we are all a part of a world of promontories, buttes, mesas, islets, archipelagos, and other geographical features far too numerous to mention here. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, my tried and trusted companions.
Why not, Doc?
Why not what?
Why not ask you for whom the bell tolls? Doesn't it toll for thee?
For me?
When you two have finished, then can we all get moving and try and find something to eat?
They walked down the trail in the dull mid-morning light, winding between the trees. Ryan looked back once they'd gone 100 paces, and wasn't surprised to find that all trace of the huge hidden redoubt was gone. Ryan quietly checked the small rad counter that he wore on his lapel, finding that it was barely shaded out of the green toward the yellow, meaning that they were about as safe as they could be anywhere in Deathlands. The labor that had gone into building the redoubt, and many others like it, was staggering, and the cost incalculable. All of them had been constructed in a hurry at the very end of the 20th century, when the new Cold War was raging with a particular threatening bitterness. This one, built in a backcountry area of rural Tennessee, was almost invisible. Much of it was below the surface of the land, and Ryan guessed also below the levels of the surrounding lake, now blending perfectly into the much-changed landscape so that nobody had entered it for close to 100 years.
Ryan, if it's an island, then how we get off?
Like Trader used to say, there's always a way. Over, under, around, or through. In this case, it looks like it'll have to be over. Plenty of wood to make some kind of raft.
You missed Trader? Lost track of how long since we last saw him.
Long enough, and too long.
You think he's still alive?
Ryan thought back to the last glimpse of his old mentor and friend. Loyal little Abe was at his side, facing the forces of darkness, led by that swift and evil bastard, Straub. Ryan could still see the man, with his shaven head and his silver and black hypnotic eyes.
My heart says he's living. My brain tells me that he has to be chilled.
Jack shuddered and hunched his narrow shoulders.
Oh, phew. Goose walked on my grave. Thinking about Straub.
Let's not think about him.
He the worst?
The worst? A lot of candidates for that position.
You think Straub the worst of them? Or was it that Rusky? He was bad.
Major Commissar Grigory Zemyanin. Guess he would run Straub close as a powerful and dangerous man. But somehow he wasn't as evil. Brutal and cruel, but not the top drawer son of a bitch Straub was.
What about Court Strasser?
Gets my unanimous vote for sicko bastard numero uno.
At least most of these gibbering demons from the past are long dead, and the Earth a much cleaner place for their passing.
And there's the legends you've talked about. The Magus, the Warlock, the Sorcerer.
Three names for a single man, Mildred. Steel eyes and half a face. First man to try and buy and sell stickies. Most decent folks would run 100 miles before crossing those muties. He used to sell them to Gert Wolfram, the ringmaster of the greatest traveling freak show in all of Deathland's history. Now there's a truly evil couple.
But they're dead, aren't they, lover?
Nobody knows. Some folks say that the Magus was never really alive.
Let's find something else to talk about. Just thinking of men like Straub and Strasser makes me feel sick to my stomach. Perversions of humanity.
Moral muties.
They reached an open clearing that ran down toward a gently sloping beach with open water beyond.
Still hungry.
You and your stomach.
You the one said to change the subject. There you go.
Fortunately, Ryan's supposition that the redoubt was now set in the heart of an island proved to be false. It was lucky, because they found little or no fallen timber suitable for making a raft to get them off. As they walked along the beach, Ryan in the lead and JB bringing up the rear, they found that the landmass was linked to another, larger body of land. A narrow causeway, less than 6 feet wide in parts, ran across, roughly southerly.
Still no sign of wildlife. Maybe fish? We could try.
Ryan was walking cautiously along the path, constantly watching the water, aware of how vulnerable they were if any large muti should attack them. But the lake remained calm and placid, and they all made the crossing safely.
Fish? Didn't see sign of any.
Could be good trout country.
Ryan stooped and cupped his hand.
Ugh.
Ah, no fish in that. Nothing living in that.
Mildred then did the same for scientific reasons. Cautiously, she touched her tongue to the liquid.
Ugh, iron, sulfur. Where there's pollution, there always seems to be sulfur. Ugh, and some other metals. Lithium, zinc. Just a hideous cocktail of poisons.
At least we had plenty to drink in the redoubt. But the sooner we get away from this ruined place, the better.
The trees look healthy, but I can't feel any sort of life.
No game, no fish. Not a bird in the sky. Just these bastard flies, and I don't fancy eating them. Well, they don't seem to have any objection to eating me.
Ryan looked around, spotting what could have been the twisted wreckage of an old fire watchtower, jutting out several 100 feet above them.
If I go up there, I should get a view all around. Maybe find the best way out of this blighted maze of water and islands. Take me about a half hour there and back.
Could we all come?
No. We got no way of knowing how far we're going to have to walk to get something to eat and drink. It's best that everyone else conserve energy.
I confess that I am already feeling just a trifle fatigued, Ryan. I shall lay down beneath yonder ridgepole pine and await your return. All that I lack is a jug and a loaf of bread.
And thou?
And me?
God damn it, Mildred.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.